In Defense of Globalization, author Jagdish Bhagwati. Anti-globalization, why? Globalization has become by now a phenomenon that is doomed to unending controversy, the focal point of always hostile passions and sometimes violent protests. So what is the globalization that is in contention? Globalization can mean many things. Here, however, we plan to focus exclusively on economic globalization. Economic globalization constitutes integration of national economies into the international economy through trade, direct foreign investment, short-term capital flows, international flows of workers and humanity generally, and flows of technology. But why are the critics of globalization agitated? What bothers them? There are two main groups that need to be distinguished. There is a multitude of hardcore protesters who have a deep-seated antipathy to globalization. They come from different intellectual and ideological directions and do not all share the same ideas and sentiments, but many buy into a linked trilogy of discontents that take the form successively of an ethos composed of an anti-capitalist, anti-globalization, and acute anti-corporation mindset. There are the critics of globalization, whose discontents are well within the parameters of mainstream dissent and discourse. In their essence, these discontents translate into the arguments that economic globalization is the cause of several social ills today, such as poverty in poor countries and deterioration of the environment worldwide. Different aspects of globalization. Recall that globalization, even in its economic aspects, has many dimensions. Economic globalization is distinct from globalization on dimensions such as increased international accessibility of print and other media. For example, internet access to newspapers and magazines and the reach of CNN and BBC Today, or growing enrollments of foreign students. Yet, the popular discourse on globalization has tended to blur the lines between these different dimensions and to speak of globalization and its merits and demerits as if they were an homogeneous, undifferentiated phenomenon. Globalization, socially, not just economically, benign. Economic globalization on balance is socially benign. Then the proponents of that view, that globalization needs a human face, are raising a false alarm. If you believe that globalization needs a human face, you will want to inhibit, constrain, reshape and challenge it. But if you believe that globalization has a human face, you will think of a very different set of policies and institutions to accompany it. Among them, you'll want to think of policies to enhance, supplement, complement and accentuate its good outcomes. What then are the principal dimensions of an approach to make the beneficial globalization process work even better? We will sketch here the three principal prescriptions that need to be kept in view. Handling possible downsides. Occasionally, globalization will do harm that requires attention. We must create institutions and policies that either reduce the probability of such downsides or can be triggered so as to cope with them, preferably doing both. Accelerating the pace of social change. Then again, the pace at which globalization advances social agendas need not be accepted as satisfactory. Child labour is known to decline as economic growth occurs. But what can we do to accelerate its removal? This is where the question of appropriate choice of policy instruments and international agencies to oversee them becomes pertinent. Optimum rather than maximum speed of globalization. The difficulties that Russia got into under shock therapy, which was a program of very rapid stabilization and reform measures, are a reminder that the best speed is not necessarily the fastest speed. Growth and poverty. We were also aware that growth had to be differentiated. Some types of growth would help the poor more than others. For instance, an outward trade orientation helped the Far Eastern economies in the post-war years to export labour-intensive goods. This added to employment and reduced poverty rapidly. child labour, increased or reduced. Some anti-globalisation and anti-child labour activists tend to merge into a symbiotic relationship. Globalisation is regarded by them, if not as a cause of child labour in the workforce, at least as a phenomenon that increases the incentive to use it. Yet, there is little evidence of this perverse and malevolent relationship. The truth is that globalisation only accelerates the reduction of child labour and enhances primary school enrolment and hence literacy. Women, harmed or helped? Globalisation can help rather than harm women. In particular, when one examines how globalisation has affected the women of Japan. In the aftermath of the great outward expansion of Japan's multinationals in the 1980s and early 1990s, Japanese men executives were sent to the United States, England, France, and other Western nations. These men brought with them their Japanese wives and children. In New York, they lived in Scarsdale, Riverdale, and Manhattan. The wives saw at first hand that Western women were treated better. So did the young children become not docile Japanese who are taught the value of social conformity and harmony, but rambunctious little Americans who value their individualism. Corporations, predatory or beneficial? Economists have noted a number of good effects that multinational can bring in their wake. Perhaps the chief good effect is what economists call spillovers. These refer to the fact that domestic firms learn productivity-enhancing techniques from multinationals with better technology and management practices. More perspectives on managing globalization. An important distinction must also be made between globalization that must be managed because it creates endogenous intrinsic problems, as with short-term capital flows, and globalization that requires management because of problems that follow from policy actions, as when large numbers of economic migrants are expelled because of an economic downturn, or when asylum is tightened by governments, or severe crackdowns on illegal migrants are undertaken because of allegedly security concerns. The debate over the speed of economic reform often becomes an angry exchange of analogies. One side claims that you cannot cross a chasm in two leaps. The other side retorts that you cannot cross it in one leap either, unless you're Indiana Jones. So you should instead drop a bridge. Then again, shock therapists argue, if you want to cut a dog's tail, you do it with one slash of the knife, not bit by bit. The gradualists reply that you train a dog by setting incrementally escalating heights for him to jump. How slow or how fast? When it comes to globalization, the transition question relates in the public domain to trade liberalization and to put capital account liberalization. The consequences of hasty liberalization are unlikely to be as disastrous as they are freeing capital flows. Economists generally argue that as trade liberalizes, consumers will gain from the lower prices of the imported goods. Trade is the best antidote to monopoly, especially in developing countries. The economist, Joseph Stiglitz, a critic of globalization, has argued that the developing countries have very large rates of unemployment, so we would wind up adding to this unemployment with the freeing of trade. But even if the workers who are fired happen to get into the pool of the unemployed, others who were unemployed would get jobs in the exporting sectors, which would expand with the freeing of trade. Thus, the overall rate of unemployment could remain unchanged, some workers losing jobs and others gaining them. Nonetheless, very rapid trade liberalisation could backfire politically, as workers in import-competing industries are likely to mobilise against the adjustment being imposed upon them. This is why the pace at which trade liberalisation takes place is likely to be higher the greater the economic prosperity and state of overall employment when the liberalisation is attempted. Trade liberalisation, therefore, has traditionally proceeded faster in times of prosperity than in times of distress.